Janae and Gola Jr., the podcast.
Certain phones for what? The Bad Boys? And that reminds me of We Ain't Going Nowhere. Bad Boys for Life. You get the third phone, right, Junior? Janae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Shell of Pennzoil Performance Line. And we are presented by Progressive, as I said, protecting your business with specialized coverages for your commercial vehicles. More at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Now, before we get to the Bad Boys of the MLB, who are still alive in the LCS, in about 10 minutes, we'll talk about the team taking the field in the huge college football matchup, but also the coach who is in COVID protocols who may not be there with his squad. Of course, we're talking about Nick Saban. But staying in the South, my Houston Astros, talking about Bad Boys, being able to, our favorite word, nail it.
Stave
off elimination. Has a lot of people in their feelings, because watching the Astros find ways to succeed gives people kind of a sour feeling.
Well, I think it's understandably so, Chinee, and I still think, again, that's the best for business at this point. What did we talk about coming off of spring this year when we thought we were going to have a normal sports season, which is, man, the Astros hate tour this year. When they're in opposing ballparks, you're going to have record attendance, people banging on garbage cans ready to boo, and everyone got denied that process, and so now we've had to wait, and they were a sub-500 team for most of the year. They lost Garrett Cole this offseason. They lost Verlander early in the year. Like, they had all of these things that they had to deal with along the way, and now they've fought their way back to this point where, yeah, they're going to game six in this series, and they've been close games against this Rays team. But if you're on the outside looking in, you're saying, all right, no disrespect to the Rays, if you get a chance to hate hard on a big stage, the player haters unite for this one. I feel like everyone would come together around that Astros cause.
Yeah, it's funny because I look at my timeline and everyone's like, we still believe in you. Let's go, Stros. And everyone, like even Altuve, I'll never forget when I came home and I was talking to my neighbor and she was like, we just got our young son in Altuve jersey. Everyone's rooting for him. Everything was going so well. And obviously this city of Houston, look what you're about. I was about to say the state of Houston based on what you did yesterday. The city of Houston is staying in formation, but outside of it, the narrative is that these guys, I mean, I feel like, and you brought this up in the show meeting, that they've sort of proven that, hey, despite all of the allegations and whatever was true or false in their heads, they're still a competitive ball club.
Well, and I think that's the advantage that we could potentially have here, Chinee, because we heard earlier today on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, Mark Teixeira, one of our great ESPN MLB insiders, on talking about this prospect, because now, after being down 3-0, they've clawed their way back to a Game 6 in this series, and they've started to come alive, and they've started to get a little confidence, and we've seen their stars' bats come alive here, and so it's got everyone thinking about what could come up in this spot, and we get the, like, we always do this when we get to these big stages and it's the big national topics, but is this good or bad for baseball? And this is what Tex had to say.
I think it's better they don't make the World Series for all the reasons that you just said, Zubin. I want to see a World Series where we talk about positive things. I don't want to be talking about a cheating scandal the entire World Series when we're trying to be celebrating the game and really celebrating these players and the staff of all of the major league teams that went through a really tough summer getting through the COVID protocols. And you know, other than a few hiccups here and there, they did a great job. So I kind of want a positive message during this World Series, not one that just talks about the Astros cheating the whole time.
And, Chinee, I understand this. Let's say for our purposes here, I'm a college football analyst outside of the radio world here. You're an NBA, WNBA analyst. We all want to talk about the positive stories around our sports.
I'm waiting for the word.
Natural, but.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, you knew it was coming. But at the same time, when you get these big stages, you would like to have clear storylines, heroes and villains. Chinee, I'll never forget being in Houston for the Super Bowl, because that was the Patriots-Falcons Super Bowl that year. That week was dead. There was no buzz around either of those teams, because there's not a lot of compelling personalities in that situation. The Patriots, as much as the outside world dislikes them, they're not always as cloaked in impropriety and the things that they've been accused of that they become easy villains. This one would be an easy target for everybody involved, and I think the ultimate spin zone is, because I heard Jay Williams say, this would be what Major League Baseball deserves. They didn't punish the Astros players in all of this. We punished managers. We punished people in the front office. We know why they had to do that, because without that immunity, they weren't going to get the information to be able to punish anybody. And I think if you're Major League Baseball, it's exactly what you just described off the top is, all right, if the Astros climb out of this 3-0 hole and get back to the World Series, and they're competitive in that World Series, whether they win or not, Does it not show you exactly what you said, that even without banging trash cans and everything else, this is a really good baseball team that got caught working too hard to find the edge, got too far out over themselves, and got exposed for doing something that's way out of pocket that went a little bit extreme, but ultimately doesn't undermine, like everyone wanted to see this year. Every time they were in a slump, every time their bats had trouble, we heard the trash can jokes come out, and I feel like that would be, in some ways, vindication for Major League Baseball.
And this is why I'm split, because we talk about my side pieces all the time when it comes to football, but when it comes to baseball, these are my two teams. And so on one hand, like, a lot of people probably are like, oh, you know, the Astros, we don't want to have that dominating the conversation when it comes to the World Series. That's also my hometown team. And then I think about my side piece team, the only, my first MLB game was at Dodger Stadium. And so I'm looking at the Dodgers, who it's sort of, I feel like we want to root for them. We want them to succeed, because earlier I even said their last World Series victory came in 1988. And so for this team, the Dodgers, who are dealing on the other side of the spectrum, where we were so excited to see the 11 runs in the first and we're like, wow, they're trending forward. And then now we see the Kershaw situation. And I'm like, I am here willing to, given like, you know, like Houston history, and I'm always rooting for my city, but like, I'm also here rooting for you. And it'd even be nice to see them in the World Series, you know, in a matchup as well. Like, that would be ideal. But now it seems experience is working against the Dodgers and in the Astros' favor, which, again, in the conversation of sports, fairness comes up.
Yeah. You know, and I always say, like, fair is a place where they judge pigs. Like, that doesn't exist really in sports or anywhere in these situations. But with the Dodgers, it's getting to the point now where all I do is feel bad. And I understand. I was driving home last night listening to Freddie Coleman on Freddie and Fitzsimmons, and he was taking calls from angry Dodgers fans who want Dave Roberts out of there. They're sick and tired of this incredibly talented team going out there and underperforming on the big stage. And a lot of that gets pointed at Clayton Kershaw. Here was Clayton Kershaw, the Dodgers star pitcher, talking about the sixth inning where things went wrong for him last night.
It's just kind of playing, part of playing on turf. You know, he kind of chopped that one up. And, you know, Freddie had two strikes on him and probably just went one too many pitches inside. And he hit it good, but it was on the ground. And still with two strikes, probably got to make a better pitch. And yeah, it's a tough way to go for that sixth inning for sure.
Janae Engel Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. And Janae, he could never account for a young pitcher on the Astros side going out there and just pitching his you-know-what off in that situation. You know, I think he hadn't pitched in it since, you know, what, early August
Bryce
or
Wilson?
September? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it had been a while since his last outing, and all of a sudden he comes out and he's dealing in that situation. And for Kershaw, whose back was already acting up, and who usually has been defined not by bad innings, but even bad slivers of innings, like a bad third of an inning, I just can't help but feel for the guy, because by all accounts otherwise, he's been everything you could ever ask a pitcher to do, except in the postseason where we do kind of the NBA Finals thing to him and a lot of other pitchers in these instances.
Yeah, I just think when it comes to the Dodgers, you have Mookie Betts, you have Cody Bellinger, you have the big names, you have the top billing, the big receipts as well. And so now the pressure just builds and builds, and now you need to deliver, versus when you're thinking about the Astros, they have that World Series 2017, you know, title. They're able to say, all right, we've been in these situations where we have a lot of people criticizing us, the adversity, and we talk about how adversity sort of warps you together, and you're seeing it work in the Astros' favor, but not to the Dodgers. And you find out, like, you talk about the differences in age and experience. The Dodgers, they're in the NLCS for the fourth time in 5 years. Meanwhile, the Braves, they haven't been in the NLCS since 2001, 19 years. And so you want to root for one team on one side, and on the other side, you want to root against, but still, they're still the most compelling storylines.
I mean, I love a young team that's going to go out there, tick off the baseball old guard, do all the things they do, enjoying and celebrating the game. Ronald Acuna is an unbelievable talent. I do feel on the other side and look for a guy who everyone has already kind of written off at this time of the year. I find myself rooting for Clayton Kershaw, even though I never know him outside of one time when Katie Nolan did that celebrity Zoom thing. He popped in and didn't have a shirt on for a little while, and then
how do you feel about yourself?
Not great. Not great, Chiney. Chiney Engel Jr. here on ESPN Radio, reminding you coverage of ALCS Game 6 is going to take over right after our show. Coverage of the NLCS on ESPN Radio starts at 9. But coming up next, we're going to venture to the world of college football, and I'm going to tell you why the number 3 is the most important number you need to know for the biggest matchup of the year. That's next. It's Chiney Engel Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chiney Engel Jr., the podcast.
Let's go.
Oh, future so bright, gotta keep her shades on. even in the house.
I think I'll keep it on this entire segment. You here for this?
I'm here for it. I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
You hit a dab?
It.
You personally keep all the dabs alive. Now, back to the show. I'm going to keep my disco ball alive as well.
You better keep those shades on all segment, by the way, now. We've committed to a standard right here.
I feel like it works with the shirt and the disco ball.
That is true. You got the tie-dye shirt working right now. It looks like the room should be a lot smokier than it is, but we're going to let it fly for right now.
Good. It's Well, I was going to say something about California air, but that doesn't really work to my...
It is my right.
Doesn't really work to my favor these days. Now, wait, Cliff, let me live. Let me live. He's just mad because I look so fly. Big Africa energy over here. Your girl's bae.
Bae. Chinea Golic Jr. You're on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr. and Chinea Kwumike.
Wait, let me do my thing. Why are you trying to hijack my segment? I'm in the vibes.
Oh, wow. My bad.
Thank you. It's okay.
Go off,
I know
queen.
You're excited. You said go off, queen. I can't even. Okay, I know you're excited because we've got a huge matchup in college football, right? Nick Saban, his status, though, can really impact this huge matchup between Bama and Georgia this weekend. And we're looking forward to talking to one of our friends who is a former player of Nick Saban's in about 10 minutes on contingency plans. But back to what got my guy so excited. This matchup, obviously, I mean, we're even glad that there's a potential that Nick Saban can coach because we want the best of the best playing with everyone, and including their coaches. But what do you see impacting this as well?
Yeah, obviously we know the impact of Nick Saban. I mean, we've seen it move gambling lines at this point on the Alabama-Georgia matchup.
Wait, I missed that. Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I understand it. Nick Saban is the best coach, in my mind, in the history of college football. One of the best coaches in any sport, regardless of sport in this situation. And so his impact is going to be felt in one way or another on this game. I wasn't ready for it to potentially be on the field. So Nick Saban tested positive for COVID-19 this week, and it was big news for everybody. What we found out is that built into the SEC's guidelines for return to play, if Nick Saban can pass three subsequent COVID-19 tests, each 24 hours apart, and receive negatives on all of those, then it can be considered a false positive, and by SEC protocols, he'd be allowed to return to full activity in this case. And Chinea, when I hear that, I know how I feel. When you hear this, again, looking at college football, everything it's gone through, all the positive tests and postponements we've seen, when you see the visual from an outside looking in, because again, I'm inside the sport all the time. For you that looks at college football from the 30,000 foot view that a lot of us do on this level, and you see, all right, Nick Saban tests positive on a Thursday and can, or a Wednesday or a Thursday and can be back to play on a Saturday, your thought is?
Is it potentially that it's a false positive, right? Hopefully, because this is a man that's 68 years old. And so you get the positive, you enter the protocol, and then now you're getting retested. And if he's coming up two times negative, and then now, you know, and what I do like is that there's a time on these tests because that forces them to adhere to making sure these tests are actually right. 24 hours, 24 hours, 24 hours, and they're all negative. Then I feel good because you have a three sample size in three days in which you are not showing. And also we heard that he's asymptomatic, which is awesome as well, considering, like I said, he's 68 years old. Like, you never want this situation. But yeah, we look at what happened. Was it with the Colts, right? A number of positive tests and quickly you get on it, you test, and then now you realize they're negative because it could potentially be a false positive. So I'm hoping it's a false positive, but they were smart to actually make sure and start in that moment. First of all, I actually was thinking, I'm glad they announced it immediately, because if it's announced a day after, or, you know, 2 days after, they try to do it behind closed doors, then we'd be saying, oh, we only heard of one negative test and then you're going to go and, you know, go out there. And how much do we trust that? So I feel like the system in this case is actually holding up.
And by the way, hearing you talk about it, it's just like the system, man, while you've got the sunglasses and tie-dye in right now, feels very on brand for this conversation. So,
and California, yeah, big California energy.
The big California energy, the visual right now is perfect in that. But Chinea, what you just said, I want to believe. Because the Colts comparison to me is a perfect one. The Indianapolis Colts had to close down their facility because of four positive tests. They retested, went through a process that we've seen a number of NFL teams. The NFL had a big rash of this during training camp, we remember, before they found out an entire lab had brought back false positive tests. And we understand that because the NFL has been very transparent, very forthright with information. They've got a players association, a union that mandates that because everything's collectively bargained. And so the cards are up on the table. College football, we know it's been anything but that. We find out all the time. Schools are not beholden to the public to bring up this information, and very few do, including Alabama. Alabama, this is in an article on .com, Alabama, as is its policy, has not released any information about any subsequent tests and what they might have shown. Alabama is not likely to release that information until there is a resolution. So like you said, the fact that this is out there is good, because I'm with you. I would like to believe, again, that Nick Saban is not tested positive for COVID-19, that he himself is healthy and safe in this situation, and him being back out on the field would be awesome were it not for the overall college football aura that this sport brings, which is I am unable to believe a sport that has no incentive to be honest because the players don't get that voice, and at every other turn has shown us, man, if you give us a little bit of wiggle room, we're going to err on the side of winning at all costs, because that's what these winning machines are built to do.
Yeah, that is exactly. And you're right. I do think it's funny because you and I like are complete alignment. We have trust issues when it comes to college sports. It's been good to us. We went to great institutions, but then we saw sort of the flaws up front and center. And so now, you know, trusting the information is a little more complicated. But I do in this instance, I do err on the side that he should be able to be out there if he's passed these tests and these tests are true, even though we do have trust issues.
Exactly. And again, I should say this is not a Nick Saban criticism, because
oh, no.
Alabama and Nick Saban have been one of the better schools in dealing with this. You've heard very little pushback on having to wear masks, having to social distance. You've heard very little of anything, quite frankly, because good teams and good programs at any level tend to absorb these things because they trust their process and doing what they need to within the constraints. This is, again, about college football as a whole not being a place that I find exactly trustworthy, because only one side of the equation gets to have input in the situation and gets to have a voice in the process, which makes it really difficult. No one in college football is more driven than Nick Saban. More Driven is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, More Driven. Coming up next, we'll talk to one of his players here.
Jhené Ngolick Jr., the podcast.
So much of the conversation from the MLB to college football has come from the Dirty South these days, today especially, and I guess we'll just stay there. Jhené Ngolick Jr. on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests join us via the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Now, in a little bit, this is a show that protects nuggets at all costs.
Mm.
And the worst thing happened to a nugget.
Mm-mm.
And I'm not talking about the food, but first, Bama, Georgia. I'm so happy to go back to the Shell Penzo Performance Line to be joined by our uncle, or big bro, maybe, Marcus Spears, ESPN NFL Live co-host and analyst for us here. He played under Coach Saban at LSU, talking about that huge matchup that we're looking forward to. Now, Marcus, first, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, y'all. I'm sitting here in my Fortnite loading screen waiting for us to wrap up our interview so I can get busy tonight.
Oh, my
Fortnite on my face.
Oh, my God. Marcus, you nice on the sticks like that?
Man, come on, MD. Yeah, bro. Yeah.
It'd be bad timing for me to say I've never played.
Oh, man. I see. You
hold
know what? Hold on. Go ahead, Marcus.
Come on now. We ain't that damn old. We can still play. First of all, I had to learn how to play the game because my son was playing it so much, and I like to keep tabs on the violence, and then I got hooked. So much for that. Now we play together.
There we go. You know what?
Sometimes during games, I curse.
You know what? Marcus, it's better he learns it from you than from somebody else, right? That's the way I always look at it.
There you go. This parenting at its finest. I'm glad I got my wife, or I'd be failing miserably at this thing.
You know what?
So anyway, what's y'all got up?
And speaking of playing together, you know, let's talk about your former coach, because Nick Saban's his status is still questionable leading into this huge matchup between Bama and Georgia. How does his potential absence really impact this game?
Well, it impacts it from the standpoint. I think sometimes the head coaching role gets misconstrued. Sometimes we have head coaches that are also coordinators, and that obviously is not the case with Nick Saban. But he is the overall arching figure when decisions need to be made, halftime adjustments need to be made, and then just having someone that can watch over everything. The operation on the sideline is for each position coach to get their group when you come off the field, and then offensive coordinator talking to the quarterback, trying to figure out what they're seeing, and defense coordinator obviously is talking to the defense overall, but he's usually a part of a specific position group too. So Nick Saban making a decision to do an onside kick like he did against Clemson, opening the half, or making the decision to okay in the decision to fake a punt. You lose all of that. And then, too, like, this is the greatest college football coach of all time. So his presence on the sideline makes everybody a little more attention to detail oriented because they know that they'll get cursed out. And the second thing is, that's just he's a constant reminder when he's around of how we go about our business. So I think you lose that. And then in particular, a game like this where the opponent's head coach knows you so well. And Kirby knows what Nick brings to what Alabama does as well. So it'll be a challenging thing if he's not on the sideline. I expect this team fully to be prepared, though. He's going to prepare them by virtual if he has to. He'll scream from a mile away, and you'll be able to hear him if he has to. But it's an effect when your head coach is not on the sideline. I knew when I played for Nick Saban at LSU, I knew going into every game, the one thing we were going to be was as prepared as any team we were playing against. So I think you lose a little bit of that without him.
ESPN NFL analyst Marcus Spears joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. Gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil based on Sequence 4A wear testing using SAE 5W30. So going to wait and see how that shakes out. We know Nick Saban has the potential to test his way back in to prove a false positive in that situation. But as someone who's into a new situation as well, Marcus, we look in the NFL. Le'Veon Bell makes his decision. He's going to sign with the Kansas City Chiefs. What kind of role are you expecting from Le'Veon now going into this high-powered offense?
You know, it's funny because I've been going back and forth, MG, about what would Le'Veon do. But I really believe that he'll be, I hate to say a specialty player, because if Le'Veon is back to his old form, obviously he becomes an integral part of what they do offensively. But the bottom line is this. This is an offense that's already rolling, and he's going to be an added part to that already success that they're having. And he also is going to be a big key figure in all of these teams playing them with everybody kind of keeping everything in front of them. And Le'Veon will be able to go underneath that zone in a wide receiver role and kind of exploit some of those things with his ability of run after catch. So I fully expect him to, you know, add a dimension to this offense. I don't expect them to change much about what they do or become some new type of offense that's more prolific. Pat Mahomes is still there. Travis Kelce is still there. They still all have the ability to make huge plays without Le'Veon. But I think he'll add a dimension of how these defenses are trying to stop Kansas City from having the big offensive outburst and be an underneath guy that can make things happen after the catch.
Let's stay on Sundays. One of my favorite things that Stephen A. calls you, I don't know if you like it or not, is Pastor Spears, because anytime you give us an answer, it's way spiritual. Marcus Spears here with us, ESPN NFL analyst and NFL Live co-host on Shanae and Golic Jr. Now, speaking of Sundays, I'm really excited about this. I said earlier today that we are all winners because we finally get the Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers matchup the fourth time, seeing that happen. What excites you most about this matchup, and what will you be watching for this weekend?
I think one of the most exciting things, well, first I want to see if Green Bay can do this against Tampa's defense. All right. And for as great as Aaron Rodgers has been playing, they feasted on some very questionable defenses, to say the least. The second thing is I want to know if Tom Brady and this offense will continue to build rapport. And it came out today that Mike Evans and Chris Godwin will be back healthy, so which I think is huge. They have to continue to build the synergy between this offensive unit in Tampa, and I want to see if they can get that done. Green Bay is not very good against the run. Fournette potentially being back, Ronald Jones being there. You will have an opportunity to exploit them in that way. But we know what everyone wants to see. We want to see Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers duel it out. And I think you could get to that point, but it's definitely going to it's going to be one of those battles where it's not all QB-centric. And I know everybody wants to talk about it, and everybody wants to think that it's just has to be that way. But the bottom line is, when you look at both of these teams, the more complete team, I would say, is Tampa, because there's still some questionable things about Green Bay's defense. But when you start looking at what Aaron Rodgers is doing, he can make up for a lot of deficiencies. So will Tampa defense allow him to do that? And then will Tom Brady and these offensive weapons finally have the type of output that everyone expects them to have being on the same page?
Marcus, we only got about a minute left here, but you played in one of the toughest divisions in football when you were with the Cowboys. Everyone in the NFC East is usually a dogfight every year if you're not paying attention to this season. Marcus, I want to get you away from those bad feelings and go to another division that's been like that, the AFC North. We got the Browns Steelers this weekend, and everyone is downplaying any of the negative repercussions of what happened with Myles Garrett last year. You were a defensive lineman for a long time. Should he have his head on a swivel still against this Steelers team this weekend?
Oh, 100%. And you know that as well as anybody. Tanae knows that too. Being athletes, you don't forget when somebody did you dirty, or you don't forget when you had one of the most polarizing fights in NFL history. Pittsburgh O-linemen have an extra incentive against Myles Garrett. And quite frankly, Myles Garrett have an extra incentive against Pittsburgh as well, along with his other defensive mate. So it'll be an added element to already what is a heated rivalry. I mean, the AFC North, my last year was done in Baltimore, and that is a prideful, that's a prideful division. And all of them feel like they are the best team in that division. Now, obviously, Cleveland hadn't been in that conversation, but now sitting there at 4-1, it's not only juice on the game, but it's also juice because of what happened last year. But you know damn well that's going to carry over from last year, man. That was one of the things that will probably carry over for as long as Myles Garrett is playing in Cleveland and they are in the same division.
And we've certainly seen that Steelers team get involved with the Bengals in years before that. The AFC North, you're right, Marcus, definitely knows how to hold a grudge. Nothing but love to hear, though. Check him out on NFL Live. Follow him on Twitter at MSpears96. Marcus, we appreciate you, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Marcus.
As always, family, peace and love. Talk to you all.
Go get this win.
I can say, go get that dub on the sticks now. Marcus getting ready to turn it loose with his kids there. That's how he stays young. Marcus Spears going after it on Fortnite. Coming up next, we will defend one of the finest nuggets in history. Why one man was trending because of the mistakes of a team Twitter account. We'll get to that next. It's Chanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chanae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Chanae Ogwumike, Mike Golic Jr. Before we get to all the shade we saw on social media, we want to send out some positive vibes, some prayers to a couple of families. Brent B.J. Johnson, a longtime scout for my own Houston Rockets, my hometown team, has recently passed away. He was reportedly working, you know, for the Rockets organization since 1994-95, the championship season, and he's remained with the team as it went through 5 head coaches and a number of general managers and even 2 owners during his tenure with Houston. And a lot of people are sending love to his family because he just recently passed. And so I just wanted to, as a part of the Houston family, just want to send him a virtual hug and you know, his family a virtual hug, because it's a tough time they're going through, and this was just very recent.
Yeah, these sudden losses are just devastating. We know 2020 has been, unfortunately, a year where we've seen far too many of these instances occur. And you mentioned your family down in Houston, that area, the Rockets organization, something so near and dear to you. Our ESPN family suffered a big loss yesterday. Vaughn McClure, our ESPN Atlanta Falcons reporter, died suddenly at the age of 48. He joined ESPN to cover the NFL and settled in on the Atlanta Falcons beat as part of NFL Nation, covered the team during its Super Bowl run, contributed to TV and radio coverage. And Chanae, seeing the outpouring of support, I unfortunately didn't know Vaughn, you know, personally, but we see these reactions pour out from so many of our coworkers, so many of the players that he covered. The Falcons organization put out a statement, and just you'd be hard-pressed to find a person who seemed more beloved by the people around him because of the way he treated people. I saw so many people tweeting that he made you feel like the most important person in the room, always had time to check in with people, and just a stunning loss for so many. So certainly thoughts and prayers for his family, everyone down in Atlanta, all of our ESPN NFL reporters who knew him so well. He seemed like an unbelievable human being and one that'll be dearly missed.
Yeah, I think especially the last few months, they just hit different. And I think a lot of people are dealing with loss. So if you are, we are here for you, Chanae and Golic Jr. We send you love, especially these two that really just happened recently. It's been tough, But we are here to uplift, and hopefully, you know, moving forward, we're able to continue sending positive vibes out there, because that's what we're all about.
Absolutely, and it's what a lot of these examples show us is, unfortunately, we can't control a lot, but we can control how we treat people, we can control the energy and the love we bring to all these situations, and we want to try and continue to do that relentlessly around here. So it is Friday, we there's no easy transition from all those things, but we do want to send you into the weekend on a positive note so we can appreciate everything that we've got and enjoy our time together. Cliff, let him have it. We want to be a jolt of energy.
Yeah, the energy level was really high there.
And now we want to keep that same energy going.
Keeping that same energy.
Keep that same energy.
You could just sense that there was a tremendous amount of energy.
With Janae and Golic Jr.
What you got?
Well, Janae, we do have some good news here on the health front as well in the world of college football. Former Florida State head coach Bobby Bowden has been released from the hospital on Thursday after being treated for COVID-19. Bobby Bowden, 90 years old, was hospitalized back on October 6th, 3 days after testing positive for COVID. Heard he's doing well, recovering, and now released from the hospital. So big shout-out, positive vibes to Bobby Bowden there. Can certainly wishing him the best as he continues to recover.
Love to hear it. You know, that's one thing we love about sports. We love a good, you know, ability for people to just be there and just fight through things. And I think seeing him walk out of that, considering the age, it just is nice to hear and see.
Absolutely. I saw, by the way, and I saw this the other day and got word, Matt Berry, my partner last night on the Thursday night football broadcast of Arkansas State and Georgia State, which, by the way, speaking of energy, if you wanted offensive football in that game, 59-52, the win for Arkansas State last night. Come on over here.
But
Matt Brown tweeted out a picture of him and Bobby Bowden from back in the day. I had no idea that apparently Matt Brown was a Florida State alum.
Really?
I was yesterday many days old when I finally found this out. Yeah, Mac Brown started his playing career off at Vanderbilt, finished at Florida State, so who knew?
So it's a reunion. That's what's up next.
Absolutely. But what's up next really, Chiné, for us as we keep that same energy? Beef on these Twitter streets, because I look up today, Chiné, like I do every day, and I'm looking to see what's trending, to see what we might talk about. And I see Melo trending, and I'm like, oh God, what's happening? Please tell me people aren't dragging Melo.
Which Melo?
The Melo. Stay M70.
Oh, of course. The one. I like that.
The Melo. Stay Melo. You see this? The Denver Nuggets tweeted out their main account and asked people who their favorite Denver Nugget was of all time. This graphic somehow excluded Carmelo Anthony in all of this. And so Melo was trending, videos of him shooting in the gym, people coming to his defense, and Sinead, that's the energy I love to see today. Carmelo Anthony defense and not slander on the timeline.
Thank you, because not too long ago, there was so much slander. People were so quick to say, oh, you know, he's a problem here, problem there. Put some... That's what we learned from the NBA Finals. Put some respect on the OGs. Celebrate them while we can. LeBron James, we're celebrating him. We should celebrate Carmelo Anthony because he was largely a successful story of the season. What he was able to do with the Trailblazers. Oh, Trailblazers. Did you hear that?
Trailblazers. Well, and what he meant to the Nuggets. Like, they had prime offensive Melo on that
yes.
team. Chiné, now here's my, like, stay woke moment.
Okay.
You think the Nuggets did this on purpose?
Absolutely.
Just chasing clout, looking for mentions on the timeline,
knowing
absolutely. They were
going to get they knew what they were doing. They knew what they were doing. They knew it sparked debate. And you know the Blazers are really good on social media as well, so they took the bait as well.
We all took the bait on this one.
I guess we did, because we're talking about it too.
We get our news here in Chiné and Golic Jr. Nation, at Mike Golic Jr., at Chiné. Just hit us up on the Dr. Pepper Twitter feed for things like that. Like, you had Nick Van Exel on that graphic, and you're not going to have Carmelo Anthony. And we all still, you're right, we fell for this, Chiné. We have no one to blame but ourselves.
I know. Put some respect on his name. Like, this guy has revived his career. You'd love to see it. We saw what he was able to do in the playoffs. He still got it. He's still got gas in the tank.
Still got plenty of gas in the tank. Carmelo Anthony, Lakers uniform somehow next year. Let's see if we can make that happen.
Whoa.
That is what we need in
Whoa.
The universe as we
That's
head
full throttle.
Into the weekend. Stick around here on ESPN Radio. Plenty of coverage of Major League Baseball's postseason coming up for you next.
Thanks for listening to Chiné and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.